Hey, closet busters, come on and gather around. It's time once again to kick down those closet doors of life. We're here to escape our BS, explore our fears, and elevate our self-expression. I'm your host, Rick Clemens, bold move expert and coming out coach, and I'm going to take you to the party, the pulpit, the wake, and back to the party of living your life uncloseted. So come on, grab hold of yourself and get ready to step out, step up, and step in to living your truth as we explore more stories, tips, and tricks for living your life uncloseted. Now let's get to the show. Hey there, closet busters and bold move makers. You know what this is. It's Life Uncloseted, and this is the show where we say, ah, come on, screw it. I'm going to kick down those closet doors of my life. I'm going to set myself free, and I'm going to live my life uncloseted without any apologies. And you know what? I just want to jump right in here, first show of the new year, and talk about really, truly living in the truth. Because here's the thing. Real love starts with you. And in order for you to truly attract a life partner and have the kind of intimate, healthy relationships that you want, to do the things you want to do in your love life, you have to become a good partner to yourself. But many of us enter into those romantic relationships with a lot of false expectations and hopes, and then we become really disappointed because guess what? We find that our partners are just as flawed as we are, and they come with all these neuroses and histories and everything. We're all human, folks, and today I wanted to talk about how you start to love bravely, making that a bold move in your life, but I couldn't do it alone because I needed a good cohort here to really help me out, and I met our guest just a few weeks ago on another podcast that we shared together. And she's got a great book called Loving Bravely, which I'm going to have her talk about. But it is truly about stepping into loving yourself first so that you can truly love others in relationships just as equally and have great, healthy relationships. And today we're going to explore how to love bravely with my newest friend, Dr. Alexandra Solomon. So welcome to the podcast, Alexandra. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me on. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yeah, can you believe it? Well, this is actually going to be airing the second week of the New Year. And what a better way to start the New Year than talking about how to love yourself bravely so that you can love others. So, okay, I'm going to shut up. The rest of the show is all yours. I'm kidding here. But, you know, there's something that I've found with every guest that comes on to Life Uncloseted is there's something personal kind of drives them to go do that thing that they did, write those books that they do. So why don't we start with, give us a little background. You're a professor, you teach this stuff, you've written this beautiful book. Give us a little background, then we'll dive into what was the impetus behind this.
Sure. Yeah, writing this book really was, the writing in and of itself is a bold new step for me. I mean, I've been in this career for heading on 20 years. I'm a couples therapist. That's really the heart of my work is doing therapy. I love it. I've been doing it for years and years. It's super meaningful and intimate and close and quiet. And I love that work. But I also teach. So I train graduate students to become couples therapists and supervise them along the way. And every year I get the chance to teach this amazing undergraduate class called Marriage 101, Building Loving and Lasting Romantic Relationships. And I teach that to college students, where it really is the heart of the class is introducing them to this idea that it's not so much about like finding the other person, and that certainly matters. Sure. It's about really honoring how much love stirs us from within, and we've got to be able to wrestle with ourselves, manage ourselves, understand ourselves if we want to create a healthy romantic relationship. So all of that work, all of the stuff I've done along the way kind of came together in this book, which is basically a journey in and through self. Mm-hmm. The goal of which being to grow your, what I call relational self-awareness, understanding what you bring to your romantic relationships so that your romantic relationship basically becomes like this classroom where you're learning more about yourself through the experience of loving somebody else, which I think is really the only way to go in terms of creating the kinds of romantic relationships we all say we want. We all want intimacy. We all want to be known fully, be seen, be appreciated. Okay, so if we want that kind of love, we got to be able to do what it takes to kind of create that magical, juicy, fulfilling intimacy.
You know, you're walking right into my world too, because as a coming out coach, this is like the key to someone coming out of the closet is you have got to love yourself. You've got to love yourself no matter what anybody else thinks about your sexual orientation, your gender identity. You've got to get there first before, and I use this word with every client, before you demand someone else loves you for who you are. Because if you don't have that within yourself, you don't have the right to ask somebody else to say, please accept me, please love me. Because if you have any little hint, at least this is my perspective, of not loving yourself, you open the doorway for others to say, wait, you're not there, so why should I be there? You know, it's an interesting space and an interesting perspective to play in. So I'm curious, you teach this to college students, and I do a lot of speaking on college and university, so I'd love your perspective on this. Are they like totally embracing of this concept of really stepping in and learning how to build these kind of relationships? Or is this one of those like, okay, I guess I just got to take this class?
No, they're in. You know, the class in and of itself kind of has some lore on campus at this point, you know, and it's hard to get into, and you got to, you know, sign up early, and there's a big old wait list. And they're, when they get there, they're pretty much like, okay, give it to me.
That's awesome.
They do get a little bit surprised by the emotional demands. You know, these are I've got students from engineering and, you know, the hard sciences. And so in that way, it's not the hardest class they've taken sort of intellectually, but it's demanding at the heart and soul level. You know, we're pretty unflinching around sort of especially looking at patterns, like childhood patterns. How did your family do love? And all those ways that our families show us intimacy, closeness, conflict, you know, all those messages live within us.
You know, it's interesting because I speak on college, or I had been speaking for the last 4 years on college campuses with PFLAG, Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. And there were definitely the teachers that brought us in that this was one of the highlights of the year. And it was always amazing because the teacher was like, I always know I'm going to get everybody showing up when it's the PFLAG conversation, because it has that same sort of thing. It has that lore on campus that if you're in a sexuality class, you're in a gender identity class, and the PFLAG panel comes on, you don't want to miss this, because this is the one time of the year that you've got real people who are gay or lesbian or trans or bi, and they're standing there, they're bearing their souls, they're giving their hearts, they're sharing everything. And there is no question that we won't answer. And it was amazing to see the classrooms like full to capacity, because it was a safe environment to open up and say, I don't know about this. I don't understand this. Help me get, you know, a better grasp on this. And it sounds like that's exactly what happens for you in this class with your students.
Yes. What I love about the work that you're doing, parallel to what I'm doing, I love the sort of intergenerational nature, you know, sort of older folks and younger folks coming together, and there's so much learning in both directions. When somebody, I think about like a young person who's kind of wrestling with their own sexuality and sexual identity, to kind of see somebody who's a few steps down the road talking from that place of grounded, unapologetic knowing of self, it shows what's possible, right? So I can just imagine that you are just by the process of modeling that, you're showing what's possible.
But here's the interesting twist. So that's what, you know, the basis of my business. But now that I'm out there talking about making bold moves in life in general and coming out of all these closets of our lives, I think the work that you're doing with the learning to love yourself so that you can be better in relationships, it starts to cross a lot of barriers too. I have entrepreneurs who are like, oh, you know, I don't know if I can do this. I want to do my own thing. I'm just not sure I can. And one of the first things I say to them too is, you know what? First of all, step back. Make sure you love yourself for what you're about to do. Because again, if you don't love yourself for taking that risk, ready to step out, start your own business, become that person, if you don't love that enough, you're not going to make it. Mm-hmm. You got to step back into that space. So it's an interesting kind of, in, you know, where we cross over here, where these principles you're sharing and teaching aren't just about romantic relationships. They begin to become about every relationship in life, I would think.
I think so too. I agree. It's, for me, a lot of it comes to like just learning how to manage the conversation that's going on inside your head all the time. And I certainly am my own, and I've done many, many hours of my own therapy. I've never gotten to a place where the negative chatter in my head stops altogether, but I sure have a whole bunch of tools I can use to just, first of all, notice that it's happening, right, and then find my pathways back to a place that is more present-minded, more loving, more gentle, more compassionate. And that's a really big tool that I want my students to come away with, and I want certainly the readers of this book to come away with, is just knowing how to work with yourself. And to me, it's not like a one and done process, you know? Yeah. It's a constant, I mean, I feel like I live in recovery. Like I'm recovering every day and sort of working with myself every day. And maybe if I live sort of as a monk somewhere, and this is my maybe I would reach a sort of steady state, but I don't know if maybe the monks don't either. But for me, it definitely is a practice of sort of slipping and coming back and slipping and coming back to that, to that space, and not asking somebody else to do it for me, like not asking my partner to give me something instead of me giving it to myself. There certainly is a back and flow in there. Times that I turn to him and I ask him to offer me comfort, or he offers me comfort, but that never replaces my own need to work with myself and to kind of, you know, claim my own self.
You know, you just really blew the theory that all therapists have it all together.
Yeah, right. Well,
you know, just like coaches, my clients are like, but you, I'm like, no, don't butt Rick. Rick is not there either, buddy. I'm not close. I mean, I work on it. I think that's the beauty of this work that we are so blessed to get to do is, yes, we get to impact lives, but in reverse, those lives impact our journey, because for me, at least, there's always a little bit of a mirror back to my own life that while I come off of a session, I'm like, okay, well, there's a little bit of something I need to go explore again with myself that just came up. You know, it's always a constant learning and growing and seeing and evolving in this work that we do.
Absolutely. Yes. I think, yeah. And to me, I'm a better therapist when I stay close to my own journey and my own work. There's a kind of like, I think, arrogance that can set in, right? When we're doing this, when we're the coaches, we're the therapists.
Right.
That has never been a comfortable space for me. Like, humility is my greatest path to empathy and just understanding that we're all sort of on our journeys. I can offer my clients perspective because I'm not in it, and I have ways of tuning myself to them, but it's not because I have all the answers. It's not about me giving somebody else the answers. It's about, that's what this in Loving Bravely also, I struggle with, especially like looking at sort of the dating books that are out there and books that are sort of chock full of these rules. Don't call him until da da da, and don't do this, you know, for da da da, like all these kind of like externally created rules and guidelines that to me, I don't know, they sort of seem patronizing, and they act as if there's sort of like a code to love, you know, that we sort of, there's, you know, somebody else knows something that you don't know. And
well, like there's a perfect formula. You follow this formula and you do this, then everything's going to happen. And I'm right there with you. And it's really tough because even writing my book, and I think you probably kind of came across this too, I'm like, well, I want to say these things, but I don't want people to think this is the only way to do it. Because there's lots of ways to do this.
Yep.
And even when I'm in session with people, you know, and, you know, I know you get this as a therapist too. So what would you do? Well, it's not so important what I would do, but I'll share something with you that has worked for me or clients. Maybe this might work for you. The key is you've got to embrace loving bravely your own way. And I love that you brought up the humility piece, because I'm sure that's a very big key to this whole loving bravely. When you're in relationship with partners, that humility piece to me is really huge.
It's everything. It's everything. It is the willingness to ask that question of like, what's it like to be with me right now? How am I coming across to you? Like holding on to that awareness that we are one half of the dance all the time. Like I know that in my own marriage of almost 20 years, I mean, I get into a place where I can really like list out for you all the ways that my husband is, you know, falling short, da 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 da, not doing it, da da da.
Yeah.
That's the easy. The harder is for me to ask, how am I showing up today? What's it like to be with me? What's my tone like right now? How much am I inviting collaboration? I just saw this beautiful piece on Facebook that was this lovely question to ask our partners, like, how could I make your day better today? And if we both are willing to ask each other, what can I do to be of service to you today? Then everyone's getting their needs met. They're just getting their needs met from a place of generosity, you know, and being in the service of the relationship
One of the questions when I'm working with my clients, and again, it comes, you know, I work with a lot of different clients, but I'm going to focus in just on gay men because the heart of my work has been gay men coming out late in life. And then, of course, as soon as they come out, they're like kids in the candy store. And it's like, okay, well, how do I do this dating thing? Well, first of all, nobody taught any of us really how to date, gay or straight. Nobody really gives us that handbook in high school and stuff. Now, here you are, 40, 30, 50 years old. You're coming out of the closet as a gay man for the first time. You miss that whole childhood adolescence piece. And so then they struggle with, how do I do this relationship? Well, first of all, two guys in a relationship is a whole different ballgame than the hetero relationships they've been in. And then they're like struggling. I said, you know, the one question anytime you should ask, whether you're just starting to date or you've been in a relationship, I feel a really strong question is, how can I contribute today to make this relationship richer? Because it takes it to the relationship level. It doesn't make it me. It doesn't make it them. It's how can I contribute to make the relationship richer?
It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. Yep. I find that a lot when I'm working with people who are in the dating world. I mean, the dating world has completely gone digital, right? That is, certainly in the LGBT community.
Oh, absolutely.
Every single pathway for meeting somebody, it's smaller than online, right? Online is the biggest, hands down. Okay, so fine. So as long as we remember that the technology is nothing more than a means to an end, then I think it's fine to use the technology. I think the challenge comes, the trickiness comes, we start looking for love the same way that we look for like a new pair of boots, you know, where we're sort of just holding our phone and just kind of swiping and scrolling and looking, and it kind of takes on this consumer mentality. Mm-hmm. And then so the idea of like sort of what is this person going to bring into my life? And so that's where the energy of consumerism and love, like they don't go together. So I love the question that you're asking, which is about just remembering that when you're building a relationship, for both people to be working in the service of the relationship is really how it gets going. But there's a shift there, because that's not what the apps are kind of set up to make us feel. The apps are sort of designed to make us feel like, what are you bringing to me?
Absolutely.
It's just, I think as long as...
Well, I think the whole digital world is doing that. You know, look at Facebook, look at Twitter, look at everything. And I'm in there as much as anybody, but so much of it is, what are you bringing to me? Or... here's what I'm giving to you now. Now make me feel good that I just gave this to you. You know, it's that whole expectation. In fact, back to your students, I'm curious, in their world, in the millennial, you know, I'm going to say the millennial world and the next generation coming up, what is the thing that scares them most, have you found, about learning to love bravely and do this deeper stuff?
Yeah. Well, so my students are, you know, they're all in college and it is sort of the way that, well, I think this is true for millennials, whether or not they're in college or post-college, the idea that the pathway into love very often begins with physical sexual intimacy, and then the emotional intimacy is sort of retrofitted, you know? Yeah. And they'll offer me very sort of pseudo-rational arguments that like, well, we have to see if there's sexual chemistry there first, you know, before I bear my soul. But opening up physically and sexually first can come with its own sorts of challenges, right? That is
absolutely
when sex happens without a foundation of trust, very often it's not as physically satisfying and as rich and as meaningful as when there is sort of an emotional connection as well. So a lot of time, so the thing they end up telling me they're most scared of is having their hearts broken. Mm-hmm. And I do think that hookup culture and sort of these ambiguous relationship statuses, you know, the sort of like friends with benefits or just keeping it really chill, really no drama. It's all an effort, I think, to not have their hearts broken. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, I think it perpetuates the problem. It makes them more anxious. They're more anxious about real relationships because they've tried all these kind of like ersatz relationship formations.
So that's I see it in the gay culture all the time, gay men all the time. It's like, I mean, you know, the scruffs, the grinders, whatever it is, the apps, it's all about, okay, let's connect. What I really want to do is connect deeply, but they can't. Okay, I'm generalizing here. So sorry, guys, but I'm going to say it like it is. You want to connect so deeply, but the quickest way to connect is let's just hook up. Mm-hmm. And then they wonder why they can't connect deeply. I mean, I have friends and you know, experiences of my own where it's like a connect, and okay, fine, hook up, play. Oh, I kind of like this person. Well, wait, I'm not sure I like you on that deeper level. It was great just to have that fun little tryst. Mm-hmm. But now let's go try to build this. Oh, it's really hard.
Yes, it's hard because now we really have to take our clothes off. Now you need to understand that my mom was an alcoholic and here's how that affected me. And my dad, and my, you know, there's, now we're sort of peeling back the layers and now you're learning parts of my story. And that's the scary stuff.
Well, that's the uncloseting. In my world, that's the uncloset. You know, it's like, okay, you can uncloset yourself for a quick jump in the hay, you know, quick little thank you, sir, thank you, ma'am, whatever. But guess what? You still have a whole nother closet to walk through when you start coming clean about, okay, my family has a little bit of mental illness in it. I really like to drink a lot and I can get a little crazy at parties. Okay, I'm really, truly a vegetarian and I absolutely cannot cross. All that stuff didn't come out in the foreplay.
Right.
The true foreplay now begins. And I think this is the thing that so many people, gay or straight, doesn't matter, they miss this piece that if you put the right effort, again, my perspective, into the emotional foreplay before the sexual foreplay, you save yourself a lot of time, you save yourself a lot of heartbreak. And to me, the heartbreak that you experience by finding out, ooh, we're not an emotional connection first, is so much easier to take than the heartbreak you experience after you've had the sexual foreplay and then experience the emotional foreplay.
Yes. Yep. We're not wired to, I mean, I think that there certainly are, I think, especially for somebody who's just coming out, there may be some time that really where sex as play and as experimentation can be really, really validating. But by and large, when we have sex, our whole self is in there. So it is, I think the thing I struggle with is when I see my young people, gay, straight, whatever, shaming themselves for catching feelings. Because we are embodied. And so when we connect with somebody skin to skin, there's more of us that's showing up for that. We can say, it can be playful. We can say it's easy breezy, but very often feelings come along with that. And I think that the biggest self-abandonment is when we start to shame ourselves for feeling emotionally drawn, for like wanting, for like grabbing our phone and seeing if he texted us yet and wanting more. So I really think that kind of like, when we feel connected with ourselves and unapologetic, I think we can say, listen, I really like you. This was fun and games, but I really like you. And let's, can we see where this goes? And can we see what else is possible?
But that's so much like taking off a whole nother layer of clothes and making yourself truly naked is to say, I really liked you. That to me is as scary as, okay, the clothes come off. Do you like what you see or not?
Right.
You know, it's like now there's a whole, and I've got two of those, well, not literally in my household, but I've got two daughters that are right in this millennial generation. And I love what you said about shaming feelings, because that's exactly what I see so much in my own kids and then their friends. It's like, okay, if I start to like you and then something goes wrong, I should have never done that. Shouldn't have opened myself up to that. If you don't open yourself up to that, you're never going to have a rich, loving relationship. You know, it's never going to happen.
That's right. I love the idea of young people taking a love story, beginning, middle, end. So even if it ends, so if my students are most afraid of having their hearts broken, they're really afraid of endings. Mm-hmm. But that's like sometimes that full love story, beginning, middle, end, is kind of what prepares us for the next relationship. So very, you know, because people are committing to long-term relationships later than ever, right? Average age of entry into marriage is 29 for men, 27 for women. Mm-hmm. And in the LGBT community, it's even a little bit older than that. So there's lots of years to have these sort of mini love stories. And I think that young people are afraid of kind of seeing the course of love through, like beginning, middle, end.
Well, it's such a generation of instant gratification. That's a lot of it. I see that all the time. And what's so interesting to what you're just saying, Alexandra, is this happens, and I know we keep coming back to this, but this happens in the later generations who are coming out of the closet after living their, you know, not living their truth. They go through this same thing. They're suddenly like, okay, I come out of this heterosexual marriage and now I'm in this. Okay, I instantly want instant love. I want instant, you know, acceptance, all this stuff. And it's like, hello, guess what? You get to go do this all over again. And I'm sure you find this similar thing, because it isn't just the gay culture that I've seen this in. I have many, many, many heterosexual friends who go through those midlife marriages and divorces, and it's the same stuff. We are just human beings, creatures of habit that, okay, I want this to happen now. It's like, wait, 20 years ago when this happened for you, you kind of had to work for it a little bit. Guess what? You can go do it all over again.
Yep. There is no way of reducing the fact that it takes time to build a relationship. It takes time.
Absolutely.
You're right that like in this digital age, we are used to having our questions answered immediately. I think we're all getting more impatient, generally speaking, and especially when it comes to love. I mean, there's nothing else that stirs us as deeply and as vulnerably as love does. So it makes sense. It makes total sense that people
I want to circle back here for just a second, because we're kind of coming to that space. I want to get just a little deeper with you. What did you learn most about yourself as you wrote the book?
Well, interesting. Speaking of this impatience, I was impatient with the book. I was impatient with the fact that this was going to take months and months and months to write, because just the same thing as falling in love. I wanted to know if it was going to work out. Like, was this book going to work out? Like, would it, you know, would people like it? How would it do? Would it be well received? It was really hard to manage the fact that there was nothing I could do to make it go any faster than it needed to go. Mm-hmm. So I kind of watched myself be impatient, and I watched my vulnerability. I feel like it gave me a whole new appreciation for people in the dating world, for my students who turn in these papers for grades, you know, like watching myself submit chapters to my editor and waiting for the feedback, and, you know, my ego would rise and fall with the feedback. Mm-hmm. So just, it was for sure, watching myself in the process was really illuminating for me about who I am as a person, and also I think opened me up to new levels of empathy for my students and my clients.
Mm-hmm. I think anytime we get into the realm where we're playing in the words of bravely and vulnerability and all of that, you know, kind of going down the Brené Brown pathway, but I think those are the words that truly help us grow the most. And they're not fun places to be. You know, when you think about being brave, you know, when I talk to people about, okay, well, what's it going to take for you to make a bold move? As soon as I say the bold, they're like, oh, that scares me. But why does that scare you? What definition are you putting on bold? What definition are you putting on brave? What definition are you putting on, you know, being vulnerable? That scares you. Mm-hmm. Because they're just words. I realize they have value. I realize that there's a definition behind it. But when you can break this down, and I went through a very similar space that you did. That's why I was laughing as you were talking about doing your book, because there was, I wanted it done. Like, okay, can we just design the cover, even though I haven't wrote the first chapter?
Right, you know? That's right.
You know, it's like, can I get the foreword? You know, it's like, wait, you haven't even got the first chapter done yet, Rick. But what I found as I went through this was, I saw those authenticity, because I, you know, my book, similar to yours, you talk about being authentic and being brave, and, you know, doing some of these things that put you in these vulnerable places. And what does empathy mean? And what does communication mean? Every time I got into one of those deep spaces, man, I went through some pretty deep stuff myself. It's like, wait, this is going out there. And whether it's a home run or, you know, a first base, as far as a book, people are going to read this and somebody's going to take this to heart. And then I started wigging out and going, oh my God, somebody's actually going to believe me and all this sort of stuff. But I think the beauty of it is, this is where we see ourselves. And this is where we become even better at doing what we're meant to do here on the planet, which is help whomever needs the help from us.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I'm curious for you, what does it mean to you? This is one of those kind of Oprah loaded questions. What does it mean to you to love bravely?
To me, it means leaning in, like sort of having the hard conversation when I would rather shut down. I'm more prone to shutting down, withdrawing, retreating, sort of turning inward. Mm-hmm. So for me, loving bravely is about like taking that deep breath and staying engaged, even when I'm uncomfortable, and trusting that in my marriage specifically, trusting that we're going to come through it with a deeper understanding. I still get really nervous about conflict. And even though I've had the experience of, you know, feeling disappointed, feeling angry, feeling hurt, talking it through and feeling like we get to the other side, even though I have that experience, I still get tense and have to sort of remind myself, okay, open, like stay open, mm-hmm. don't close, don't retreat. So that for me is my loving bravely edge. Is
I knew we had a lot in common. You and I sound like the same person. I hate the conflict, but I know the conflict is where we get the richness of getting through some of the toughest parts of our relationships. It's like, you got to go into the, you know, as Brene Brown would say, you got to go into the arena. Mm-hmm. And how you go in there and how you act in the arena, yes, that's where the magic really happens. But I can tell you, just a few days ago, we were in the arena and I'm like, okay, this isn't fun, but this has to be done in order for us to keep moving forward. So,
mm-hmm. yes.
So I just want to, you know, before we wrap up here, one of the questions I always ask every guest is, you know, this is Life Uncloseted. And if you were to give somebody some advice about living their life uncloseted or loving bravely, what would you love to leave the listeners with here?
Boy, one of the big ones for me is encouraging people to not be afraid of therapy, mm-hmm. individual therapy and couples therapy. That is a yes. big, big, big thing for me, is all too often couples come to me when they're really at the end of their rope and they're yep. thinking about breaking up, or they've already talked about breaking up, or they've looked into divorce attorneys. Mm-hmm. And man, I would love people to not be afraid of couples therapy and just mm-hmm. going early, going often. We do like a mm-hmm. dose-based approach, like going yep. for a little dose early, go away, come back again, go, you know, I have couples that I've seen 3-4 rounds of therapy over time, just because yep. it's so helpful to have somebody in there with you who can kind of see the big picture, who can mm-hmm. see the whole dance. So that's really my big one, is a little shout out for therapy of all kinds.
Well, no, I agree 100%. You know, people say that to me all the time. Well, what's the difference between coaching and therapy? I said, you know, it just depends on your perspective. I said, quite honestly, to me, therapy is a beautiful place to start doing the really deep work.
Yep.
And then coaching is a great place to carry on with, okay, I know where I want to go now. I just need like that cheerleader, that person to keep pushing me forward, to hold me accountable on a weekly basis, to say, okay, you say you want to get here, let's create the plan. It's kind of like the strategy. Now we're beyond, you know, figuring out, okay, what needs to get done. Now let's put this into play. And I love holding hands with therapists because I think it's such a powerful duo when we can do it. And I've had huge amounts of success in that arena. And to your point, this is one of the things that always shocks people. When I'm working with someone who's coming out, you know, I usually am working with the person who's coming out, and rarely do I get the blessed experience of working with the spouse, but every once in a while I do. In fact, I just wrapped up a 4-month experience with a husband and wife where the wife was coming out and the husband, you know, was straight, and it was beautiful. And they were so, they just worked so well together. But one of the things I said to even them, because I had the opportunity, but when I do it with an individual, it kind of shocks them, is say, you know what, here's something I'm going to recommend to you, and you may be really surprised by this, but the best thing you could do as you're coming out, if your spouse is open to it, I really would like you guys to go do some couples therapy. Mm-hmm. We know the path you're on, and here's my reason for it. Mm-hmm. There's hurt, there's anger, there's shame, there's all that stuff, and I can work with you on that, but you're about to unravel a relationship. And the best thing you could do was go work with someone who can truly help you unravel the relationship in a healthy way versus let's unravel it and end up hating each other at the end of the day.
Yep. That's a beautiful use of couples therapy, is to have a Absolutely. Really kind of conscious, loving ending.
Right. And there's sometimes they will jump in, you know, and they'll figure out how to make it work for a while. You know, I've worked mm-hmm. with several people who decided, well, we're going to stay in a mixed orientation marriage and we'll make it work. It is not my job to judge that. I think whatever works for you is my goal as their coach, is to help them figure that out. I think that's exactly where you come from too, is let's figure out the best solution for you as a couple.
Absolutely. But, oh my gosh. We're definitely in an era where people are constructing models of love that wouldn't have been possible, you know,
exactly
50 years ago.
Absolutely. Well, Alexandra's book is Loving Bravely. We will have a link to it here on the show page. She's an awesome person, as you can tell. Thank you so much for helping open up the new year and be here. You're actually the very first interview of the new year. So just thank you. And keep doing the beautiful work that you're doing. And thank you for giving and sharing yourself so bravely and beautifully today, Alexandra.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
And that's it. That's a wrap. Another episode of Life Uncloseted has come to an end. But don't worry, we'll be back in just a couple of days with another episode with new guests, new tips, new tricks, new wisdom about how you can go live your life uncloseted.
And you know what? A lot of people out there may not even know we exist. So if you feel so compelled, share us. Tell people about it. Give us a rating and review on iTunes. Share it from your phone. Wherever you can, spread the word, because the more people that we reach, the better the planet will be when everybody is living their life uncloseted. I'm Rick Clemons, the host of the show, that big, bold move expert and that guy that constantly wants to help people step out, step up, and step into living their life uncloseted. Have a great couple of days, everyone, and we will be right back with you very, very soon. Take care.